Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for another fanshmabulous episode of
The Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
You're going to tell this listening audience, who adores me, let's be honest.
Oh, behave.
Jeff Lutz.
I'm spreading my wing. This is me to the nth degree.
Wow! Isn't that exciting?
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Stand by for action.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. It's a Wednesday edition of the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. We have a brand new guest host. He's certainly been a guest frequently, but I don't think you've ever guest hosted. Joel T. Lamerno, general manager of the Wichita Thunder. Right? You've never guest hosted this show.
I have.
Oh, my God.
I have. Back at the old studio with Jeff. Actually, it might have been you even. I remember the old studio, KQAM days.
That was
That's true. It was a different show.
That was before this
show. Yeah, it was a different show, but I did that guest host with one of you 12 years ago. I remember sitting in the seat. I remember, yeah. And the lady that ran the front desk there.
Kathy.
Remember her, yeah.
Yep.
Tony
Dusing. There you go. That was over in Brittany Center.
And I must have really peed someone out because I've never been brought back.
This is the first time you've been asked back. Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you. The Thunder, man, it's right here a week from Friday that you open the 2024-25 season. Tell us a little bit about that. How's that looking?
Well, everyone always asks me.
You had to take a swig of whatever that is first.
Cherry Limeade from, can we do shameless plugs of our sponsors?
Sure, why not?
Sonic Drive-In, Rick Bernard having a Cherry Limeade. But, you know, the number one question I get asked and have been asked multiple times in the last 2 weeks, are you ready? How are we looking? Well, I'm not ready, and I always tell everyone the same answer because there's so much to do. People don't understand, like, how much you have to do to get ready. You don't just... The players just don't show up, and all of a sudden, opening night's here, and you play a game. There is so much. You got to order the dashboards and do all the artwork and make all the graphics for the video board and get all the season tickets put in the system and print it and put tickets on sale and do advertising, marketing, social media, immigration, housing, travel. I could go on and on and on. So I always tell people I'm ready. I'm excited and ready at the first intermission of the first game. Once everything's done, everyone's in the building, and the game's going on. That's when I finally will relax. And then for team-wise, you know, we'll talk about it a little later. But, yeah, we got a lot of good guys back. We got a lot of good rookies. And then, you know, that X factor is your affiliate.
And a hockey,
what you get.
And a hockey season lasts so long now. It must feel like there's not a lot of off-season.
Well, unfortunately, there's been too much off-season for us the last couple of years because we didn't make the playoffs.
True.
You know. But realistically, yeah, hockey, I mean, even our league ends in the middle of June. So if you're playing in June, by the time you get the players out of town and you wrap everything up, it's July 1st. You got July, August, and then September. I mean, everything starts rolling around. So yeah, it's like the NASCAR season, which I'm also a closet NASCAR fan. But it's you got 2 months off in
what
NASCAR.
What aren't you a fan of? Even since you've just gotten here today, you've told me about soccer.
We've talked about hockey.
We've talked about the NFL, Major League Baseball. You like the NBA, the Sixers. Now you've divulged. You like what'd you just say?
Well, NASCAR.
Yeah,
big NASCAR.
You like NASCAR?
Love NASCAR.
So you're just a wall to wall sports fan.
I am a wall to wall sports fan. I also like LaSalle University college basketball. There's a sport I don't watch: golf or tennis much.
There you go.
But I know enough about it to talk about it. Not tennis, though. Really, I mean, you're obviously a little bit older than me, but I'm the guy that, you know, my dad would wake us on the 4th of July for Wimbledon. So Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe, Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett. That's when I started watching, you know, tennis. You had your 5 to 7 people, Yvonne Lendl, that you knew and you followed and you watched. And now, I mean, you can't keep track. There's 180 different tennis players.
It's hard to know what's going on.
It is difficult.
Especially in tennis. I still get into golf, but the division between the PGA and LIV kind of affected me on that. I'd like all the good players to be together. So
it affects me in the sense that I follow golf, but I don't. Even when they put the articles out about the PGA and LIV, I don't understand what they're talking about. They talk about, oh, we're going to get together for this event, or, you know, this guy left this event because of it. I think it's hard to follow. I agree.
Very confusing. We got the baseball playoffs going on. I'm not interested. Well, I'm interested, but my team's not there, so not as much emotion. You have a team, the Phillies, and they are down now 2-1 to the Mets in New York, game 4 today. Right? It's today, right?
Yeah, and it is. I think there's 4 games today.
I think all the series are going today. And the Mets have, as I told you, the Mets just have that look about them that they are going to take this. I'd actually be a little surprised if the Phillies, with Ranger Suarez going today against Jose Quintana, I'd have to pick the Mets. I'm sorry. And what does this say? The Phillies have been so good now for a while, but they haven't been able to get to the winner's circle. What's missing?
Well, I told my wife last night when we went to bed right at the end of that Padres game that the best two teams in the National League are one game away from going out. You know, the Phillies are a team that have great pitching and great hitting, and, you know, I'll liken it to the Cubs, who I know you hate and who I also like, but at the beginning of the year, surprisingly, the Cubs hitting was great and the Cubs pitching was great. And, you know, they were in first place for a while or second place, and then they went on a huge losing streak that cost them dearly because they missed the playoffs by 6 games. And they weren't able to sustain it. The Phillies have great, great hitting, no question. They have some really great starters. They got solid bullpen, but they haven't been able to get them on the same page the last month or so. And I'd liken it again to the Royals. The last month of the season, all the Royals could do was pitch, 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 couldn't hit. I mean, how many games in a row did they lose right when they needed? They almost missed the playoffs. So the Phillies offense can come alive and win this tonight. And if they win it, they're going home and winning game 5. But
I agree with that. Zach Wheeler will be a load.
But you said it, and I said it again. I say things I say just like you do. The Mets are just – come on. Did you think they were going to hit a 2-run homer to beat the Brewers in the ninth inning of that last game?
They've been so dramatic, and they've scored so many runs. Their offense is just clicking. They've uncovered a star in Vientos. I mean, nobody can get him out. And they have Lindor, and Alonso's been hitting home runs, and they just got guys. And they've figured it out. For whatever reason, their roster isn't nearly as talented.
No, not at all. And
as the Phillies.
And you know, Phillies fans didn't want to play the Mets. I mean, Philly fans don't want Met fans in their building watching the game, for starters. Having, you know, I think you know this, but, you know, my family has had season tickets for the Phillies since 1971. My dad had 13th row behind the plate at Veterans Stadium. And then when they moved to the Citizens Bank Park, he moved up. Well, first of all, he couldn't have those seats because those seats cost now. But they moved up to the club level. So we're in the Hall of Fame club. And my dad, in his older age and his health, has passed those tickets on to my sister. So my whole family was at game 2. I was on the phone with them when Castellanos hit that game winner. So, you know, it's a great atmosphere. But I've growing up in the Philadelphia area, I know we don't want New York people in our building.
Absolutely. And New Yorkers feel the same way about Philly.
Yeah, so it's a great rivalry. And it's great for – I mean, how great is this for baseball? And I'll throw a jab at your son. You got the Mets and the Phillies. How awesome is that, right? Dodgers-Padres, which last night or this morning they were talking about probably the biggest rivalry in baseball right now. And again, you know, I was talking about my Yvonne Lendl-John McEnroe days. How about Royals-Yankees? I mean, it was Royals-Yankees-Dodgers-Phillies. Every year, 75, 76, 77, 78, 80. I was at all those games. And then you got the Indians, and who are they even playing? Oh, I'm sorry, the Guardians.
Come on now.
I know, the Guardians.
Guardians and Tigers.
Tigers, yeah, but outside of your son, who cares about that series?
Ooh, boy.
Seriously, Jeff, I mean, I don't mean it in a bad way, but does that the backseat of the
playoffs? Well, here's why they would care. Because the American League is fascinating. You've got three teams, the Guardians, Royals, and Tigers, that nobody would have thought anything about going into the season. The Twins were the prohibitive favorite in that division.
Go wind surge, right? It's all the wind surge is doing.
Right. Yeah. The Royals were coming off a disastrous season. So were the Tigers. And Cleveland wasn't very good last year either. So what's happened in the Central is pretty interesting. Now, I get it. That's probably the fourth of four, that series, Cleveland-Detroit. But one of those teams has a real good shot of going to the World Series.
And you might have just said it. Didn't four of their teams that almost make the playoffs? Didn't the Tigers?
Tigers made it.
Right. Twins didn't.
Twins faded.
Faded. So they almost had four teams from their division make the playoffs.
Close, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's an intriguing matchup. And I'll tell you, my biggest thing to tell you about the Royals is in March or April, I said to myself, why is this team who has nothing giving all this money to Bobby Witt Jr., right? Because, that's it. What are you going to do if he's got all your money? What are you going to do? Well, apparently.
Well, they had another $100 million that they put into free agency. They brought in people who know what to do. J.J. Piccolo knows what to do, and he's not alone. They kind of remade their entire front office. They made wise, smart decisions. Given Bobby Witt that kind of money, he's the cornerstone of that franchise for the next 12 years. I mean, they're going to be a factor for a while, in my opinion. Now, their farm system needs some work. They've got some older starters. I don't know how long Waka and Lugo can continue to pitch like this. But we'll see. The Royals, of course, game three tonight in Kansas City against the Yankees. 6:08 start. You can hear it right here on KFH. And the Yankees going with Clark Schmidt against Seth Lugo. I like the Royals in that matchup.
Well, you know, again, Royals, you're talking about the age. You know, you were talking about your Twitter stuff. You know how you're, you know, passing.
I'm off Twitter.
Off Twitter. Okay. I didn't know if that was breaking
it's
news.
It's public. We talk about everything here.
So I go back to myself as a younger, dumber person 15 years ago and look at the posts I made on Facebook. Just stupid. Like, oh, man, I'm so sick. And this is what I'm going to talk about. Ugh, I'm so tired of Salvador Perez. I had, like, posts about him. And who was the manager of that team for the Royals?
Ned Yost.
Yeah, I was one of those people that was anti-Ned Yost. And
there were a lot of those.
I just thought Salvador Perez was so
overrated.
There
weren't a lot of those.
Right, I know. And he swung at too many bad pitches. And look at this. Look at now. He's still there. And how many home runs he hit this year? I mean, didn't he hit close to 50
two years ago?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just amazing. That's just a key part where you can have someone like that good, kind of like the Yadier Molina, to make something you could understand.
Yeah, I've never been a Royals fan, but I respect them, especially this year, because they said, you know what, we were embarrassed by last season, and we got to fix that. And even in their wildest dreams, I'm not sure they thought they'd fix it to this degree, but I think they're better than the Yankees. I think they're the best team left in the American League. Sorry, Jeff. And I'd be a little surprised if it's not the Royals and the Padres in the World Series.
Wouldn't a Royals-Phillies be cool?
Royals-Phillies would be cool, but I'm sorry, but I've almost kind of dismissed the Phillies.
Well, give it one more day.
Yeah, I know, I know. I got you.
Royals-Padres would be cool.
But, boy, the Mets just kind of brushed them off yesterday.
Yeah, they did. And again, the Royals, when the series started, you know, it's great. They got through the first series. But I thought no chance against the Yankees just because of the way they finished the season. I was like, because, you know, the Yankees can hit and the Yankees can score and the Royals can't. Well, the Royals, I mean, what was game two score? That was 6-5 wasn't it?
It was a fairly low-scoring game.
The one the Royals won. No, was it too? That's confusing. I mean, last night I fell asleep with the Padres.
It was 4-2.
Okay, 4-2. So yeah, a good combo of just timely hitting and great pitching. So
and the Yankees won 6-5 in Game 1.
That was the game I was talking about. Yeah, 6-5.
And the Royals haven't really even hit yet in this series, especially Bobby Witt.
Well,
Bobby Witt's going to have a big game tonight.
Well, I hope so. I gave one of my staff members permission to take off today, 10 days before the season, so she could go to the Royals game.
Wow, what a boss.
What a good boss.
What a guy.
And it was her anniversary, too. So, you should have.
Maybe not such a good boss, but you did the right thing. Yeah. Here's what we have for you on the show today. John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant will be with us at 2:25. We'll try to get to the bottom of what's ailing KU football. And it's one of the most interesting stories of the football season so far. Now, that could be because we're right here in Kansas, but everyone had high expectations for KU, and it just hasn't come together. Mike Furches is here at 2:45. We'll talk some pop culture with Mike. I'm sure Joel T. has some pop culture things he needs to get to the bottom of. And we'll have Mike with us. And then at 3:25, our semi-annual visit with my friend Bernie Miklas, who's been in the media in St. Louis forever. He used to be at the Post-Dispatch, was there, sports columnist for, my goodness, at least 25 years. He's done radio in that market. He currently has a YouTube channel, which is outstanding. He loves to talk Cardinals, and I want to talk Cardinals today because I want to know what Bernie thinks the plan is going to be for the off season.
That Bernie Carbo you're talking about?
Bernie Carbo, former Cardinal, by the way. Made his big name with the Reds, but former Cardinal. So we're looking forward to talking with Bernie Miklas coming up in hour number two. We'll talk a lot about the Wichita Thunder. Joel T. Lamerno here, our co-host. The Thunder opens the season next Friday against?
Kansas City, October 18th, Friday, yep.
So I used to know what your rivalries were. You got so many that could be right now because it's such a regionally predominant division that you're in. Allen for a while was a pretty strong rival when you were kind of fighting them. If you go back to the Tulsa days and the Oklahoma City days, nothing like that. Is there anything like that now?
Well, the hatred for Kansas City and Allen is real. Tulsa, it's not the same as it used to be. The hatred is there, 100% Allen, to a lesser extent Kansas City. The difference between now and then is Oklahoma City, Tulsa, it was a brawl all the time, and that's just not hockey anymore. Now, some of the purists, some of the Philly guys like me who like the rough stuff in hockey, you know, we miss that, but you know how things are today with, you know, injuries and concussions and whatnot, and the rules of the game have changed, so not as much of the fighting as there used to be when you literally beat your rival up. Now you got to beat them on the scoreboard.
You have your fans, obviously. You have a very devout Thunder fan base. But what do you guys do to try to bring in those who maybe aren't as aware of hockey, that maybe don't make it a point to check your schedule and do all that stuff that your diehards do? They're going to be there through thick and thin. How does it work in minor league hockey where you're trying to engage people that might be difficult to engage at times?
This is going to sound crazy, and it's a great question, but you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, let me go back further. 30 years ago, people were coming to our game, a bunch of guys, drink beer and watch fights. It kind of transformed more into the diehard hockey fans that want to see us win. Now, I know our fans want to see us win. I want to see us win. Nobody wants to see us win more. But, you know, again, I talk to people, my wife, clients that I see at the Wind Surge games. My feeling is that 75% of the people at the Wind Surge game don't know what the score is. Because they're there for the entertainment. They're there for the stadium. They're there to be a part of Wichita. I mean, me and my wife, the last game we went to with our kids in that last homestand, we were in the Fidelity Club, and it was the third inning all of a sudden. We missed three innings because we were talking to people, talking to Jay Miller, talking to some clients, talking to friends we know, talking to Tim Grubbs, eating delicious food. I think Thunder games are, to an extent, our fans, a portion of those are now that type of person that isn't really necessarily there to make sure we win. They're there to have a good time, see some goals, see some fights, see us win, but enjoy the entertainment. We've done a lot of things differently to get more atmosphere to game. And I use the Windsurge Stadium as an example all the time. There's so many things to do at the Windsurge Stadium. I don't have that room to do that. So we're just trying to create more stuff. Like last year, we made an entire section of our arena, 100-person glass suite and a kids zone and a party zone. We moved a bunch of stuff down there. Over 50% of hockey fans now are female. Females, families, kids, looking for something fun to do. We are very kid-focused friendly right now. Kid-friendly focused. Our biggest event last year was Bluey. I don't know if you even know who these people are, but Bluey is a... Do you know who Bluey is?
No.
He's an Australian...
Oh, yeah. Now
cartoon character. Okay, well, we had Bluey. We're the first team in hockey to have Bluey out to a game. And the line around the concourse went all the way around, three quarters around the entire night for 3 hours. So we're having, I have a load of home games in November. I have 15 home games between now and December 5th. We have Bluey coming in November. We have Paw Patrol coming in November. We have Blippi, another kids thing coming in November. Families, kids, you got to
get the kids there. You get the parents.
You got to do the draw. I mean, and we have other stuff. I mean, we're going to do our $3 beer and country concert night again the night before Thanksgiving, which was massive for us last year. So we're going to hit all of the demographics. We've got a big church tonight. We haven't announced yet, but for the people that are very, you know, I don't know what the word is, religious, church friendly, because I am too. But there's a event we're going to be putting on that we think is going to be massive.
There you go.
For all demographics of people. So
we'll get more into the Thunder and their personnel a little bit later in the show, but we'll take a break right now. When we return, we'll talk KU football. John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant will be our guest. KU off to a very slow start, as you know. We'll try to figure out why with John next.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
All right. We are back. We welcome in John Kirby, editor, publisher of Jayhawk Slant, covers KU football extremely closely. John, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. Joe, how you guys doing?
Well, we appreciate it. We know it's a busy time. Even though KU has an off week, does any team in the country need a bye week more than the Jayhawks right now?
Well, I mean, they probably need a bye week from two things, and that's one, physically to get better, because they are pretty banged up. I mean, they were playing some kids there in the second half against Arizona State who didn't even travel on the previous road game. So, I mean, they're banged up. And then mentally, I mean, they've got to just get back and just figure out what's going on. I mean, you know, I knew going into the week to the Arizona State game, you know, I had been told by several people it was the best week of practice they had. And, you know, it's not like they went out to Arizona State and played bad. So, you know, I think what you worry about, Bob, a little bit is now 1-5, you know, for a team that's predicted to be near the top of the standings before the season started, and to lose games the way they're losing. I mean, they're not getting blown out. I mean, they're shooting some of those losses. They're the better team. They're more physical. They're pushing teams around. In the loss, I mean, they pushed Illinois around. Illinois is a good football team. So, you know, I think the big thing is they've just got to sit down and figure out from here, you know, get healthy and figure out what's going on in the program.
John Kirby with us from Jayhawk Slant. You're right. I mean, these losses have all been close. They've all been decided late. It's as if KU can't figure out how to stop teams in the final 2 minutes of a half. They have Houston coming up. Houston, as I predicted, with Willie Fritz as their coach, that's an improving football team. They're certainly not world beaters at this point, but Houston, K-State, Iowa State, BYU, Colorado, that's a tough stretch of games.
Yeah, they're going to hit the gauntlet there. You know, obviously, Houston, you've got to win that game, okay? I mean, you know, Houston's changed quarterbacks last week and looked pretty good, and, you know, they beat TCU at TCU, which, I mean, I think that was probably surprising to everybody. I don't think anybody saw that coming, especially with the way TCU threw the ball around against KU. So, I mean, you know, Houston will come in, a little bit of renewed energy. You know, it's at Arrowhead Stadium, so you sit here and you wonder about, you know, the crowd and you know, who's going to make that drive to Arrowhead and what the enthusiasm is with the fan base. And after that, man, the schedule gets hard. It really does. I mean, there's some pretty good teams after that. But, you know, Bob, I go back to this. Look at Illinois. KU's got the ball in their hands with a chance to win the game at the end of the fourth quarter. UNLV, they've got the ball in their possession with a chance to win the game. West Virginia, they're at West Virginia, who's undefeated in the conference right now. They've got West Virginia down 11 points with 4.5 minutes to play. They blow that game. You know, TCU's a one-point game in the fourth quarter. Last week against Arizona State, they give up the drive with 2 minutes to go to lose it, but still they had the ball at the end of the game with a chance to win. I don't know that I've ever covered in 25 years for KU a season like this, because it's either been hot or cold. KU's either had some really good teams, okay, or they had a bunch of bad teams that you just don't see them be competitive. But this is a weird year because they're competitive in every game they're playing in.
John, do you follow the NFL as well, I'm sure?
Yeah, you know, I try to keep my eye on it. Obviously, with college football, you know, you're so busy during the week, sure, that you do get Sundays off, but, you know, you're pretty focused on the team you cover and the conference.
Okay, so I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and just hearing this conversation you've had, I feel like we're talking about the Bengals right now, because, you know, everyone had high expectations for the Bengals, and we can't close a team out. I mean, you get a fumble in overtime against the Ravens, and then you miss a field goal to lose in overtime, and I feel like this is kind of the KU way. And, you know, all the media, you know, after the performance of the Bengals, they're still making it seem like Lamar Jackson's awesome and Joe Burrow lost the game for him. And the feeling that everyone says, well, the Bengals just are, they're just not a good team. That's it. Is that how you feel about this KU football team, or maybe they're getting the bum rap? Maybe they are better than their record indicates. Do you feel that way?
Oh, I think they're better. Yeah, I think KU's actually I'll tell you this right now. I look down this thing. Now, I don't think they'll win in Manhattan. But, I mean, Iowa State, BYU, Colorado, I mean, these are teams Kansas can beat. I mean, Kansas could be easily. We could be sitting here talking about a 5-1 team, okay? They've got a bunch of seniors. They've got some talent. You know, until Arizona State, I will tell you that physically – they had out-physicaled every team that they've played. I thought Arizona State was actually pretty physical. So Kansas has all the ingredients. They do some good things on offense. The defense here now lately has been a little bit of a question mark these last two games. But to me, Kansas is a scary team. I'll tell you this. I was talking with a guy who's very close to one of KU's recent opponents. He's inside their program. And he told me before the game and after the game when they played KU, he goes, we still think they're pretty good. So, I mean, when you look at personnel, when coaches break down things on film, I'll guarantee you BYU, when Kansas goes to BYU, I'll guarantee you BYU is going to say, God, hey, we can't take this guy lightly. Because if this is the game Kansas does put things together, they can beat you.
John Kirby with us from Jayhawk Slant. We're talking about KU football. So you mentioned a bunch of seniors on this team. They're in the midst of a 5-game losing streak. They had very, very high hopes going into the season. What's the mental frame of mind, in your opinion? Because to me, when you have this many seniors, it's their last hurrah together. All the expectations, the high hopes, the combination of what's still left on their schedule with three ranked teams coming up very shortly. How difficult is it? I mean, I agree with you that the talent level's there. Does the mental frame of mind match that now?
Well, I haven't, Bob, I haven't been around the team this week because they're in the bye week and they're doing no media this week. Okay. So I don't know what's going on. I know that today, I believe they're doing a scrimmage, but they're going to get a lot of the young guys some snaps in their scrimmage today just to, you know, give them a chance to show what they can do. Kids that aren't playing a lot. But like I said, last week going into the Arizona State game, I heard that was the best week of practice they had. Okay, so that's on a, what, four-game losing streak. So they're still able to put together a good practice and go out to Arizona State and play a pretty good football game against a, you know, pretty decent team. We'll find out how good Arizona State is here in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So to this point, KU still come out and played with a lot of effort and stayed in these games. I think the magic number, Bob, for me is they're the minute that they're out of bowl contention. Okay, I mean they're trying to go to back, you know, three straight bowls for the first time in the history of their program. I think if they get that seventh loss, okay, I think that's when you're going to sit here and start questioning, okay, what do kids play for?
Hey, John, you made a comment that I wrote down at the beginning, and you just said it again, and I'm kind of going to get your professional opinion of this. So I run a hockey team here in Wichita, and I can't tell you how many times my coach or someone has told me it's the best week of practice. And I've learned that every time someone tells me it's the best week of practice, we actually lose that next weekend's game. Do you ever find that to be a trend down there when you hear that from people? You know, maybe a team that's struggling, oh, we had a great week of practice. Do you take that with a grain of salt?
No. Well, here's the deal. I wasn't saying that they had a great week of practice. I said it was their best week of practice they've had all year. So I just know in a comparison state to their previous 5 weeks, that was their best week of practice. And I thought that was interesting that I had heard that from a couple people, because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, is this when we start hearing the practice isn't that great? Is this when we start hearing guys are hanging their heads? You know, is this when we start seeing guys that realize, hey, you know, we had all these preseason expectations and we're falling short of them? Do you stop? Do you see the effort stop? But it didn't. They played hard against Arizona State. I mean, you know, it was 104 degrees at kickoff out there. I mean, it was a tough place to play, and they left it all out on the field. It just came up short. But the effort was there, and they played hard. So the question is going to be now is how many more times do I hear, hey, that was our best week of practice? My guess is until they can string some wins together, my guess is we don't hear that very much.
Talking here with John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant. So, obviously, a lot of the success of KU is pinned to its quarterback, Jalen Daniels, who really started slowly this year. He's gotten better. He had a very good game in Tempe against Arizona State. How much do you think he's turned a corner now? And is that more like the Jalen Daniels you think we'll see from here on out?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, when they face Houston, I don't know how good Houston's defense is. I've watched them a couple times. They're okay, you know. I don't know if that game against TCU was an anomaly or just what is Houston. Obviously, when they go to Manhattan, they're going to face a very aggressive defense and a good defense there. So, you know, it'll be interesting. The last two games, West Virginia and Arizona State, are games that Jalen Daniels started to look better. Okay, I mean, listen, they averaged 30 points a game in the last two games against West Virginia and Arizona State with about 850 yards of offense in the two games. That's not a problem, okay? When you're scoring 30 points and averaging two games and you're putting up 425 yards average offense a game, I mean, you should be in games or winning games.
I hear you. KU with a bye week this week. They play Houston coming up next Saturday. Off to a 1-5 start, a tough schedule ahead. One of the most fascinating stories in college football, in my opinion. John, thanks for coming on to talk about it. We appreciate your insight.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
John Kirby, Jayhawk Slant. Here is Mike Furches. We're going to talk some pop culture. Mike's hard to reach. Not getting on your text the way you used to, my friend. What's up, Mike?
I'm sitting here, and I hear you introduce me, and then the call dropped. It's like, what in the world happened?
We were just lamenting that I had trouble reaching you today. You were, you're a busy man.
Well, sometimes I got a little through all this medical stuff, so that's always a lot of fun. And I've never even played hockey. What do you think about that? Listening to the show this morning, I could have been beat up even worse.
It's old. That's what we talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know Joel Lamerno from the Thunder?
I don't know him. I know of him because
I know of you, Mike.
I've been the big same with you. A lot of respect from people like Johnny Freedom and others that have known the game, and then of course being such a big Wings fan, there are so many things that's taken place between the two and the collaborations over the years. So I'm looking forward to the hockey season. I think you've done a great job, and I love all those little things that get people into the seats. So
Thank you.
Well, let's delve into a little pop culture. I'd like to know where you want to start today, because with a kitchen remodel and the things I'm doing at the moment, pop culture is not completely on my radar. So what have you been into lately?
Well, I've seen most of the big ones that are out. The best one that I've seen, I think I mentioned it once before, was The Wild Robot. It's an animated film. It's very, very good, very entertaining, and they find ways. I
don't think
animation.
You have seen it yet.
I think I was getting ready to see it as well. It was, but the animation genre, when it's done and done well, it's not just for children. And I wish people would understand that. This one here, The Wild Robot, is an excellent movie with the underhidden tones that can point to adult humor as well as child humor. There's a lot of darkness that deals with death. You think of a children's movie that deals with death, there's not many of them. But this one, I'd say it's for older children, like at least 8, 9 in that ballpark. But it's a wonderful, wonderful movie, one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And then on the backside of that, I saw Megalopolis, which no one's talking about, the Francis Ford Coppola movie. No one's talking about it because it's just it's bizarre. It's one of those super bizarre Brazil type movies that to me was just not very entertaining. And when you have to spend most of your time trying to figure a movie out, that's something else. And then the one, Bob, that I saw.
Yeah, and I can't even figure out the synopsis for it. I'm trying to read it and I've lost interest.
The word, I don't know if I can share what the word was in Hollywood about where Francis Ford Coppola was at when they were making this movie, but it was not on set. He was someplace enjoying life to the fullest without being on set as he should have been. So, and then the one that a lot of people are talking about is Joker Filet Adieu. And that's a different – the movie is probably getting worse buzz from fans than any movie in a long time. And I didn't find it to be that bad, but I'm kind of weird in that
way. What's the movie you just mentioned?
Joker, the Joker from the Batman.
It's getting panned by everybody.
Yes, it is. But I didn't find it that bad. The weird thing of it is, if you can imagine an animated thriller psychodrama musical. It's kind of like an adult variation of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The music makes no sense in it. But the story, if you remember the Joker with River Phoenix, the first one that was done, the interpretation and the look at mental illness was rather fascinating, and this takes it kind of a step farther. It is not a style of movie that fits in with the genre of movie for people to go enjoy it, and I think what I was looking at for this weekend, they have reduced the seats available to see that movie drastically. I think it'll be in one smaller theater, and it's not in any of the larger theaters anymore after 1 week. And that's kind of blowing expectations away.
Well, Mike, I have a 9-year-old daughter, so I appreciate your take on The Wild Robot. And you saying, you know, maybe 7, 8, 9-year-olds. I was telling my wife I had a talk with my 9-year-old in the car yesterday about boys and dating and whatnot. It got pretty in-depth, so maybe the death topic is next. The last movie I saw at the theater a month ago was In-N-Out 2. What do you think of that one?
I love the In-N-Out stories. I love what they've done with that. The animation, and again, it's the same type of thing. If you saw that, you know what I'm talking about. The way that they can inject adult humor for adults to think about that's can kind of be left at the discretion of the parent or the adult to discuss those with the child if they want to. My training's in psychology, so I'm very much aware of the fact that we have to be careful of some of those kind of things. But I think In-N-Out is a fabulous, wonderful, fun, enjoyable series for both the adults and the kids. In fact, it's one of my top two or three favorite animated series. And it may be number one, In-N-Out. So,
talking with our friend Mike Furches, Pop Culture. There's a movie I read a little bit about, and I see that it's now out. It's called Lee, and it's about a war correspondent, a photographer, Lee Miller. And it stars Kate Winslet, who is, in my view, one of the top five actors of our time. Do you know much about this movie? And it sounds extremely interesting.
Yeah, I have become kind of intrigued about war correspondents. And if you remember me talking about that with the movie Civil War, which is now streaming. So anything that is I love the concept of journalism. I love journalism done from a journalistic perspective. But one of the things that you just never think about is war correspondents that are there doing the story. So that premise alone, after seeing the Civil War movie that was out here just last year, intrigued me enough to want to see this as soon as it comes out. So I'm looking really forward to it, Bob, just to see what they do with it.
Well, on your topic there, you know, it's been in the news. I read an article just about 2 weeks ago about the situation in Israel and Palestine and the number of reporters over there that have been killed during that. I actually have a question that is time relevant to you. It's going to be on the opposite spectrum of the animated kids movies. Are you familiar with the Terrifier series?
Oh, I was just with my wife the other day at the Spirit Shops off of West Kellogg, and I was complaining because Terrifier didn't have blood splattered all over him. I'm very much
all right.
Familiar
so you've
with
seen
him.
You've seen them.
I've seen one and two, and I'm looking forward to the third. It's kind of what I would call a shock gore horror, in a fun way. There's the gore horror that's done towards just brutal. I don't care about seeing it, but Terrifier. Have you been to the Spirit Shops? He's one of the featured.
I haven't yet, but I did see the skit on Saturday Night Live about the Spirit Shop last week.
Okay. I was talking to Max on the phone earlier. Saturday Night Live is back to being good stuff, in my opinion. So, but the Terrifier should have blood splattered all over him. And what a perfect place. It's a perfect place to go visit for the Halloween season. I love it. Are you into the Terrifier? Being a hockey guy, I would assume that maybe you are, but I don't know.
I have seen Terrifier 1 and 2, and I've told my best friend, I'll give him his name, we call him Poppy, but you have to see these movies for the amount of gore. And he finally texted me the other day that he just watched one, because I texted him the article about Terrifier 3. Did you see the premiere story about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've seen it.
People walking out of the theater throwing up due to the violence.
Doesn't
that was
seem
the
like something I'd enjoy.
It's a good family film. I'm going to take my 9-year-old.
There you go.
I was getting ready to say that would be a fun time to buy the theater. You can buy the theater for like $100 and make tickets available and use it for a fun get together for all the radio listeners and stuff.
Final moments here with Mike Furches. Mike, I'm curious to know what you think of my decision. And I went back and forth, and I struggled with it. I'm not going to act like it came easily, but I'd been thinking about it for at least a couple years. I just made a decision that Twitter X didn't bring me enough to overcome what it did, what the negative effects that it has. What are your thoughts? Did I make the right move? There a right move? Is it just an individual thing? I don't think you're on Twitter a whole lot.
No, I'm not.
Why, and what do you think of it?
I think, I started a book probably about 5 years ago on the interaction of social media. When I started the Virtual Pew, it was done, and it's not per se just a straight religious thing, but it was a situation to try to do things that's kind of gone astray. But it was looking at social media, and the book I was writing was looking at social media and how you do ministry there. And I after about six chapters, I just quit because it changes so much. The problem is the social experiment, I think is the name of the movie that's on Netflix, when the creators of the format are not on the format and don't allow their children on it, that says something. And so I, you know, we can have disagreements, but the key is knowing where your levels and where your boundaries are at and not crossing your boundaries. And if something like that causes you to cross boundaries, it causes you to be angry or causes you to get upset, I think it's, I admire you and respect you for doing it. And even the interactions that we've had, Bob, I generally respect honesty and communication. And sometimes that means, you know, doing something you don't necessarily want to do. And I would have no, I'm not on Twitter much or X or whatever it's called, because Facebook's all I can handle. I'm on there too much. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, it all can be a quagmire. So what I'm trying to do on Facebook now is to be more lighthearted and entertaining and maybe allow my sense of humor to take over instead of my anger and concern. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. That'd be a good vlog for us to do that we could do together, the contrasting guys that finding ways to get along. It's like I quote the
there you go.
Rodney King. I quote the prophet Rodney King all the time. Can't we all just get along? And there's so much truth to that.
It'd be a wonderful thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
Well, thank you, Mike. So, we always appreciate your time, and we'll catch up next week.
Next week. Later, guys.
All right. Mike Furches talking some pop culture. It's Bob Lutz, Joel Amurno here today, your co-host, The Bob and Jeff Show. KFH Radio. We'll take a break, come back, and get more into the Wichita Thunder and its roster and players a week from Friday, opening night for the Thunder against Kansas City. Hour number two will also include an interview with my friend Bernie Miklas, a longtime media guy in St. Louis, and you'll indulge me as we try to figure out the Cardinals. That's all ahead, hour number two. Stay with us.
Stand by for an urgent bulletin.
Showtime. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Ready.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Cleveland has no hitters. A bunch of Punch and Judy hitters is what we call them in our day. You punch and then you run like Judy.
I say wimpy, wompy, wambly.
Jeff Lutz.
Yeah, so we're sexist now. That's cool.
We like it.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
It's awesome, baby.
All right, welcome back. Hour number two, Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. Jeff out today. He says it's for purposes of taking care of his home. I believe it's probably more for purposes of watching his Cleveland Guardians, who currently trail Detroit 1-0. Not much scoring in this series.
Well, it is the lesser of the four playoff series, as I alluded to earlier.
You did allude to that, and I feel like I'm betraying my son if I agree with you, but I also feel like I'm betraying common sense and intelligence if I don't. So I don't know. It's 2-0 now in favor of Detroit. They scored a run in the third. So boy, what a beautiful day! October. Why can't all the months be like October?
Best month of the year, my birthday month.
Although
fall,
it's been kind of hot here.
Miserable, but we got a weather pattern change coming on Sunday. We'll be hitting down to the 60s and 70s, just so you know.
But then it won't be long till we're in the 30s and 40s.
Which is even better.
Really? You like
that?
Give
me a blizzard, early blizzard. I'm an East Coast, North. I grew up in the Northeast.
You did.
I like that stuff. Hey, since you mentioned it, I've already done it twice today. How many times do you mistakenly say the Cleveland Indians or the Washington Redskins? Because I know I've done it.
Did I say it?
No, you didn't, but I'm wondering, do you still find yourself catching
yourself? I've gotten to the point where I don't do it anymore.
Because I have this mistake where I constantly call the Wind Surge the Wingnuts, having, you know, it's a similar name. Mm-hmm. I worked for the Wingnuts, and people have actually done it to me, too. I was like, actually, it's the Wind Surge, but that's one thing that I still can't get right.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. I did it for maybe a few months, but I just kind of correct myself. I like the Washington Commanders. I like their story. I like their quarterback. I like the fact that a franchise that's been bad for so long finally gets rid of an idiot owner, and they start to figure it out, and That franchise has a lot of rich history. To me, that's one of the big stories of the year, and they play Baltimore this week, which will be the game of the week in the NFL.
Well, go Washington, but it's also easy to like Washington because it's so easy to hate New York, Philadelphia, and Dallas.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But Baltimore, Washington, you know, besides being, what, a 45-minute train ride,
yeah.
that's a tremendous game coming up. And when we get the boys together tomorrow, we'll pick that game.
I feel like it's in Baltimore. Am I correct?
It is in Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, go Washington as a AFC North guy.
Yeah, you saw him up close and personal. And, you know, we had a lot of rookie quarterbacks coming into the league this year. It looks like Caleb Williams is figuring it out a little bit with the Chicago Bears. But, boy, Jaden Daniels is there, it looks like. He looks like he's the next big one.
Well, and it's kind of, again, I'm a repetitive person sometimes, but it, you know, going back 3 years to the Bengals when Joe Burrow was that new quarterback and, you know, Ja'Marr Chase was that new, you know, the Bengals weren't built with any stars the year they went to the Super Bowl. CJ Uzomah, tight end, you know, nobody on Washington's a star. And they talk about it all the time. They're kind of their no-name defense, and they're doing it with just the young guys.
Yeah, it's fun. So tell us a little bit about your team. You got Travis Clayton now on board as one of your coaches, former course Thunder legend. Tell us a little bit about the personnel. What's your team look like, and what, how much can you really tell about how good or how much of a contender you have here before you really see them?
Well, Coach told me we had a great list today.
Oh, that's that's not good.
Actually, I told myself. I went down to see the boys today, and, you know, I think I might have touched on it briefly, but at the beginning of the show, but, you know, I can't, you know, it's tough to give an answer, and the answer always gives, well, you know what, we got Jay Dickman back, we got Mikel Stanell back. I mean, Dickman's one of the best players in the league, Mikel Stanell's one of the best and one of the fastest players in the league, and we have Bates back from last year. Peter Bates last year at the All-Star break was the leading scorer in the entire league. And then, as unfortunately as some things go these days, the European leagues raid our league for the best players to pay them twice as much to play half as many games for the last 2 months of the season. And he chose to go over to Europe. And a great kid. And I actually want to throw him a bone because this summer he called coach. He's like, I know I left you last year and went to Europe, but I'd really like to come back if you'll have me. So it was really nice. And he's a great guy. And we're happy to have him back. So we've got three great scorers. We had a rookie last year named Kobe Walker that Travis Clayton actually recruited for us last year as we were in discussions about bringing him in, and turned out to be one of our just a stud, turned out to be awesome, and in a month was almost a point of game guy, and fans love him, so he's back. So, you know, you've got a good base, got a lot of our defensemen back, so there's your first part. Part two, you got to have some good rookies. Coach feels we have some good rookies. I can't really comment to that because they're rookies and he's recruited them, and I'm not that familiar. Part three is going to be your affiliation. And you know, as we were talking about earlier, baseball and hockey affiliations are completely different. Baseball, they are the Minnesota Twins are feeding the AAA team, which is who?
Yeah.
Who? St. Paul.
St. Paul.
St. Paul, and they're filling the wind surge roster. All the coach has to do is show up and, you know, for lack of a better statement, show up and coach the team. Well, not at this league. Depending upon who your affiliate is, what their budget is, what their payroll is, what their farm system looks like, you're going to get between 1 and 12 players assigned to you. So, you know, the Kansas Cities of our league, Cincinnati and Wheeling, they have a large part of their roster assigned to them by their NHL team because they have a deep farm system. So, God bless them. That's one thing we're going to have to deal with.
So, MLB has four teams and then Dominican leagues.
Yeah.
They have all these players coming to them, and it's their responsibility. Why is it not the responsibility of the NHL franchises?
Well, it's just
too much money.
It's money, sure, one thing, but hockey's just never been set up the way because there's never been a, up until a few years ago, there were two AAA leagues and there were at one point five AA leagues, and they all had different salary caps and rules. They were never on the same page. I mean, you know, AA is AA, right? AAA is AAA. That hockey's never been that organized. They're getting to that way now that there's 32 NHL teams, there's 32 AHL teams. Our league is currently at 29 with some expansion teams on the horizon.
Expansion team.
Yeah, I know. I actually thought that it would be announced soon, but that's all I can
you
say.
You can't say anything else?
No, I definitely can.
Oh, my ears perked up.
I'll tell you what, the fines are big enough that I'm not saying anything. So there's no clear – okay, so there's your biggest reason. There's no 32-32-32. So you can't have that where, okay, so great. So two teams in the ECHL or three teams don't have an affiliate, you know, if you do it that way. So I think the goal is to get to a 32-32-32 system, and I think maybe that'll help to some respect. But you know, it's a Canadian thing, it's a United States thing, it's hockey's different. You know, hockey's not as, you know, like baseball, the national pastime now. It's a lot more popular than it was, but just too many what ifs, too many different things. Right now, you know, we went way off track, but you know, right now we've got five guys coming from San Jose. They get in today at 5:08. If you want to go greet them at the airport, feel free. They'll be carrying a San Jose Sharks bag, so you'll know who they are. But one of the players we're getting is Aaron Dell, who's a goaltender who's been in the NHL for the last several years. Our fans certainly know him because I actually just read something about it online as I was looking some things. And he beat us in Game 7 of the CHL Finals in 2013 with the Allen Americans. Went his way up to the NHL all that time, and he was brought back to San Jose to add some depth to their system, and he's coming down. So, you know, probably what we could use the most is offense. But coach says our defense is tremendous, and you got a veteran goaltender like that. Maybe we're going to be one of those teams that wins with defense.
Maybe so.
Apparently, defense wins, right? That's what they always say. No one ever says offense wins.
They've always said that.
That's what they say.
I like teams that have some offense too, but that's, you know, that's just me.
We have some.
I know you'll have some offense. The guys will be carrying sticks out there, I'm sure.
They will.
And a week from Friday, the Thunder opens its 2024-25 season against Kansas City. It's tough to ask these questions because, you know, the Wind Surge this year didn't have a good team. The previous 2 years, they had a really good team because the Twins. And the Twins are seen to have a very good farm system, but it did not translate into Double-A this year. How important is it for the Thunder to have a good season and make the playoffs?
Well, for many reasons, it's important. We haven't made the playoffs enough in the last few years. I mean, honestly, since 2013, which I talked about, we made the playoffs twice. Then we haven't won a playoff series since 2013. So, yeah. Now, granted, we were in the CHL in those early years, and there was a 8 to 10 to 12 team league. Now we're in a 20, we've always been in a 26 to 30 team league, which, as you know, it's a lot harder to win. But got to make the playoffs. You know, obviously, coach knows that it's real important for us to make the playoffs this year. And he's, you know, Bruce always tells me Bruce has won a lot of championships. He has won a lot. Junior hockey, pro hockey as a player, American Hockey League as an assistant coach. He's won everywhere he's gone. He was the coach of the year in this league a couple years ago. So we've got to be the team. It's important for our fans. It's important for us. It's important for coach. It's you got to make the playoffs. You know, you can't be – I want to be that team that – and I said this because the last 2 years we've been eliminated from the playoffs on the last weekend of the season. 2 years in a row, last weekend of the season eliminated from the playoffs. I want to be that team that on March 1st knows that you're in the playoffs. You're not like, oh, boy, we got a month left. We're right there. We're in a four-team battle. No, let's be that team in the top three that's not battling for that spot the last month and a half of the season. So that's the important thing. But, you know, you touched on something right before that, previous to your last question. I was talking to the owner of the Fort Wayne Comets at league meetings last week, and I was like, man, sure would be nice. Wouldn't it be nice just to get to that 32-32-32 where the NHL just fulfills our team? And he said to me, he's like, Joel, I don't want to give up control of my roster. So that's another thing. We have teams in this league, and you know, Florida, Fort Wayne, Toledo, teams that win all the time. These are teams that they have a team for the purpose of just kicking butt on the ice, and they want to build their team. And they don't. They sure it's great they'll get a few players from above, but they want to build their team themselves. Then there's owners in this league and GMs like myself who would love to have it be supplied to us, and then maybe you fill in a couple guys. So that's another thing that you'd have to get through. I mean, if it was something to vote on, I don't know if all the owners would even go for it. But
Joel T. Lamerno with us, guest hosting today. The schedule is always interesting because the league is so spread out now. And, of course, you play most of your games in your division. But there are that handful number of games that you play outside of your division. What's the toughest road trip on the schedule this year?
Well, we don't have a lot of tough road trips because they one thing they've done over the years is they've realized with cost and whatnot.
You can fly now.
Well, yeah, and we've been flying for years now. We fly every year to Utah and Idaho. I got real lucky last year. We played Utah and Idaho on back-to-back weeks. So we flew to Idaho, took a bus from Idaho to Utah, and then played Utah and flew back from Utah. So it was only one round-trip flight.
Not bad.
Which was awesome. And I asked for that this year. Again, obviously it didn't work out. So, but Southwest is very inexpensive, and I don't have to pay for bags. And if you're not familiar with hockey, those bags are big. They're big and they're heavy. And we have 24 of them, plus our stick bags. And not to mention all the players' travel bags. So Southwest is tremendous. I booked our trip to Utah in July. I booked our trip to Idaho in September or August. And now I have we have a new team in our league, if you're not familiar with it, in Lake Tahoe.
Wow.
And
that'd be an awesome trip.
Well, they're in our division, so we'll be making that trip. Obviously the Vegas Golden Knights. Well, a couple years ago, they put in AAA team in Henderson called the Henderson Silver Knights. Well, now they put a AA team in Tahoe called the Tahoe Night Monsters. So all of their players will now be in the state
in Nevada.
In Nevada. So we go there the last weekend of the season. I haven't booked that yet, but there's some concern with teams in the league because you have to fly into Reno, and then you have to drive across the mountains to get to Tahoe. That's how it works.
I've done that.
Well, I was like, when the schedule came out, I was like, oh, that's awesome. We get to go to Tahoe in April. I'm not going to have to worry about weather. Well, they had a blizzard there in May. So
we'll see
how it goes. But, yeah, so we fly to those places. Obviously, a lot of bus trips to Allen, Tulsa, Kansas City. And then we have a trip in Iowa. We also go to Iowa. But then we have one trip there where we go out to Toledo, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, that. But, no. I mean, every now and then they'll send us to Atlanta or Greenville or whatnot. But.
You know, our friend Jason Duda, who's frequently on this show, can barely get up and down. I mean, the kid is a wreck. And he blames that some on playing hockey for most of his life, but some of it also on the bus trips. So the players today don't have that problem. Well, not that they're never on a bus.
No, they don't.
Not like Duda was.
Well, no, they don't, because, I mean, I was the broadcaster back then, so I was on those trips with him, and we were on a bus, which was a seated coach, and then you folded up those bunks to make, you know, the four seats or whatever. You'd fold those four into two bunks. Metal, not sturdy, bumpy. No, they weren't fun. In the last 5, 7, 8 years now, we're on a fancy bus with everyone's got their own bunk with power and electricity and a phone cord, and we got bathrooms, we got a kitchen, we got a bathroom.
Beautiful.
So travel in style, yes. A lot more you can walk around. Like there weren't even enough bunks back in those days when we were traveling, and, you know, people would be, you know, sleeping on the rookies sleep on the floor. And I remember a specific trip where one of our players, we were going to Memphis, and we had just hit the Arkansas border, and one of our players had food poisoning or the flu, and he threw up all over the bus. So we had to make a stop. I mean, I could write a book about the stories, but I'll just leave it at that.
Well, with all this wonderful travel now, where's the romance in minor league hockey anymore? Huh? Where's the struggle? Where's the day-to-day adversity?
No more buses catching on fire and pulling into a building that's 80 years old. You know, there was a team in our league in the you know how you call it, the 2000s, the early two, the first.
The aughts.
The aughts, I thought that was the word, in Austin. And their dressing room was not attached to the building. So you'd have to leave the building, take the rubber mat walkway to this outhouse, which was your locker room. And the arena actually had a balcony where fans could throw stuff and spit on you as you went. So, yeah.
There you go. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Bernie Miklas. Longtime journalist, columnist, opinion person in the city of St. Louis. Certainly has ties a lot of other places, but St. Louis has been his thing. And I like to visit with him a couple times a year. I like, and indulge me, people. We're going to talk about the St. Louis Cardinals next. Bernie Miklas, stay with us.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
We'll roll with it. Here's my friend Bernie Miklas, longtime journalist, radio guy in the city of St. Louis, busier than ever. Bernie, how are you?
Bob, I'm doing great. And as always, it's good to be with you. And I wanted to say hello to Joel and wish the Thunder a good, I think it's the Thunder, right? I'm screwing this up. The Thunder.
It is the Thunder.
I know.
Bernie, I got it.
I wrote it down. I wrote it down and then forgot about it. See, that's what happens when I get old. But good luck on the start of your hockey season.
I got to commend and thank you because your pronunciation of my first name was very East Coast. You said Jowl. You said something like a Jowl. You two syllabled it, and that's kind of like what my mom and my older brother used to call
me. There you
go. So good job on that. Thank you.
You're an East Coaster. I grew up in the Baltimore, D.C. area. So, yeah, that we do have our own little dialect, I guess.
We do.
Bernie Miklas with us. Let's get right into it. And first, let me commend you on your new YouTube channel, relatively new. I look at it every day, especially when you talk about the Cardinals. That's my bias. I've been a Cardinals fan, as you know, forever and ever. And it's really well done. I love hearing what you have to say. You don't pull any punches. I appreciate that as someone who tried not to pull punches when I was in the media. So congratulations on that, addition to everything else you're doing, Bernie.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Bob. I've enjoyed it. You know, we're up to nearly 6,000 subscribers, which is a lot for a YouTube channel. And, you know, I've actually been doing this about a little less than a month or a little more than a month. So, we're off to a good start. I have a lot to say and a lot to share and a lot of research to kind of use to put things in perspective. And the comment section is great, too. I would advise people to go for that, if they just want a good place to talk about Cardinals baseball, because there's a lot of good opinions in there. And I'd say 95% of it is really civil. So it's good stuff. Thanks for giving me a chance to promote it. You just do youtube.com/ at Bernie Show. So anyway, thanks, Bob.
There you go. So let's get into the Cardinals, because what a year it was, what an off season it's going to be. I think we are in agreement that John Mozeliak, we can question the wisdom of bringing him back for what essentially will be a lame duck year as director of baseball operations. Chaim Bloom ready to take over that spot. I think he should be taking it over now, as you do. What's going to happen in this offseason? How are Cardinals fans going to look at all this when opening day rolls around? What's your opinion on that? I'm asking you to look into the future a little bit.
Well, listen, I hope the Cardinals, I'll just start with this. I hope the Cardinals aren't going to try to spin it like, oh no, we're going to contend. Oh no. Our goal is always to make the postseason and then go from there. I think Cardinals fans would respect it if the Cardinals played it really straight with them. Listen, the Cardinals have been really good for a long time. I did a little thing recently, and I talked about, since Mozeliak's been the general manager of present baseball operations, they've had one losing season. And I know that's not like the definitive measure. But my point is, the Cardinals have had one losing season since 2008. The Dodgers have had one, and the Yankees have had none. And the other 27 franchises have had at least five losing seasons, and some of them, a good deal number of them, have had nine or more losing seasons. My point being is that even though the Cardinals have flattened out in recent years in terms of postseason success, they've been very consistent through the years. So now that's a long setup from what I'm about to say, but I was trying to, you know, give some perspective to this. They're overdue for a, like a soft rebuild. They're overdue for a reset or a, whatever you want to call it, a renovation. I mean, they've kind of put this off for a long time. They ended the era when Molina retired, Pujols retired, Wainwright retired, some other players. They kind of shifted it into a whole new era. And it makes sense at this point in time, in my opinion, to just kind of recognize where you are. You need to get on a higher track, and it's okay to reset or have a soft rebuild for a couple of years. So that's where I think they're headed in 2025, and I'm okay with that. I really am okay with that. Because the one thing I don't want, Bob, and I know the one thing you don't want, is for them to sign more free agents, and basically with John Mozeliak doing a bad job with that in recent years, I don't want to see them throw away more money. I'd rather have Chaim Bloom take over after next season and then have him make the spending decisions. And I'd also like to have him, if they're going to go one more year with Ollie Marmol, and I would like to have him hire the next manager, not John Mozeliak. So I would prefer a blank slate start for Chaim Bloom. And I think what this means is the Cardinals will be looking around. They're going to put the word out. Some of their guys will be available in trade, like Ryan Helsley, who's an excellent closer, but he can become a free agent after one more year. His value's never been higher. You probably get a lot for him. Sonny Gray's got 2 years left on a reasonable contract. If he wants a chance to go to a winner, a serious contender, he'd probably be open to a trade. I think you could get a good amount for Sonny Gray. Maybe Wilson Contreras. Maybe if Arenado wants out and he lets them know, maybe they'd have to eat some of the contract. Maybe they could move him. I think they're going to look to move some people off the payroll to make sure that in a true soft rebuild, just to open it up so they can have room for more young players and give all those guys a full run, rather than just sort of messing with them, you know, up and down. Let them play for a year. So that's kind of where I see it going.
Talking now with Bernie Miklas. One thing I've gathered from watching baseball this year, and especially the playoffs, the National League is loaded right now. Whatever the Cardinals do, it's gonna take some time to catch some of these teams. You're talking about teams that spend a lot of money, teams that have superstars, teams that are in really good places for the foreseeable future. Do these folks take that into account? And it further solidifies your viewpoint and mine that it's okay to take some time and be thoughtful in this rebuilding process.
Well, your point about the league's getting tougher, it's true. And the NL Central's getting tougher in particular. And listen, the NL Central teams have not done well in the postseason, and that's, to me, a separate issue. But we all know Milwaukee's smarter than just about everybody with the things they managed to do, you know, regular season success consistently. They've taken over the NL Central division despite spending a lot less money or having a lot less revenue available than the Cubs and the Cardinals. So Milwaukee's not going anywhere. They're really good. Listen, I know David Bell personally, and I like him a lot, but he was a terrible manager, frankly. And now that you swap out David Bell and you hire Terry Francona, all of a sudden that puts the Cincinnati Reds in an entirely new light, because we know they're loaded with talent. I think Craig Counsell in the second year in Chicago, I think they'll take a big step forward next year. And I think you look at Pittsburgh, and while their offense is nothing special, they have the makings of a fabulous starting rotation stocked with young pitchers. So the Cardinals are going to have to take a, you know, it's one of those things. They're going to have to take a step back in order to get to move up and to get as good as most of those teams or a lot of teams. They're not going to do it by staying in the middle lane. You know, staying in this one, like in the middle of the track where they're not exactly a serious contender. but it's like they don't want to tell their fans, well, we have to rebuild for a couple years. If they stay in that position, it's only going to get worse. And again, so some Cardinals fans have said to me, they protested what we have said about, hey, we don't want John Mozeliak spending any more dumb money. So some of the fans, with all due respect to them, they say, well, no, they won 83 games. If they go out and get this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy and they spend some money, it's like, no, thank you, because I don't trust the guy who would be doing the spending. And I don't want Chaim Bloom to take over a bigger mess than he already has in 2026. You know what I mean?
Yep. Bernie, we live in Royals country here in Wichita, of course. We carry their games here on KFH Radio. It just so happens that you did a video yesterday that pertained to the Royals and how the Cardinals might look at the Royals and the model that they've used to turn things around and maybe, use some of that as they go forward. Right. What the Royals have done this year, and I think they're going to go to the World Series, it's just remarkable.
And the thing of it is, all right, the Royals are so interesting to me because this is only the third time in 39 years they've been in the postseason. So I had Cardinals fans saying to me, well, why are you saying the Cardinals can learn from them? And they got the context all wrong. I'm not saying the Royals are going to be a dynasty. My point is that the Royals had to enter into another kind of rebuild, if you will. And in the middle of that, they brought in J.J. Piccolo, who's an excellent president of baseball operation. And what he did is completely revamped their baseball operation, did a lot in the minor leagues. He brought in a lot of smart people. I mean, a lot of smart people. They invested heavily in getting their analytics department up to speed. And actually, from what I hear, my sources in Major League Baseball, the Royals may have one of the three or four best analytics department in the majors. I mean, since Piccolo came aboard, he's hired 30 different new people and made sure that they're strong in all areas of player development. Their model's got a lot of good people running this department, that department, this department. They have a uniform hitting approach, which I don't think people have talked about enough. Like, for example, the Cardinals are a team this year who looked at way too many called strikes, especially when they had runners in scoring position. They just stood there with the bat on their shoulders. They wouldn't swing at pitches right down the middle. I noticed that the Royals are an excellent contact hitting team. Plus they punish strikes. They don't watch strikes go by. And the interesting thing is when the Cardinals hit a strike and they put the ball in play and the Royals do the same thing, the Royals production is a ton better. And that tells me that, one of the things the Royals want is they want a uniform approach to hitting. They want the swing mechanics to be really sound at every level of the minor league. Swing mechanics. So when you make contact, you're going to get something out of it. And that harkens back to the Cardinals' problem with a lot of their young players. They all come up and they all have a different approach, and they're all over the place. There's not kind of a model for how, hey, this is how we would like to do it as the Cardinals. The Royals, hey, this is how we like to do it. This is going to be our approach. The Cardinals have never, under this regime in the last several 7-8 years, they've never really defined what their approach is at the plate or what their approach is at other areas. They don't have a guiding philosophy. So the Royals have gotten really, really smart, and they've invested a lot of money in infrastructure. And I think their manager is fantastic. And what did he do? He's a guy that worked with Terry Francona. He's a guy that worked a long time in that Tampa Bay system. And when he came over, he hired Tampa Bay coach to be his bench coach, and he hired another guy that worked for Terry Francona. So the Royals have, top to bottom, very, very smart people that are guiding the franchise. And this is exactly what the Cardinals need. That was my point of saying, hey, you can learn something from the Royals, and you should try to. Because look at what they did in short time just by making sure they were as smart as could be and they had everything they needed to be as smart as they could be.
Bernie, we touched a bit earlier when you weren't on here that I'm kind of a Phillies fan because I grew up there and my family's had season tickets since 71.
Sure.
I became a Cubs fan in 81 when my favorite player, Larry Boa, was traded to the Cardinals. Do you remember the throw into that trade?
Cubs.
What did I say?
Trade
to the Cubs. Do you remember the throw-in in that trade?
Sandberg?
Yeah, the Ryan Sandberg. So Yeah, and I know Ryan Sandberg's probably a, you know, Bob, never
hurry
forget
up.
Never
hurry
forget
up,
that
Joel.
Game.
I don't want to talk about
exactly.
This.
Exactly. So I appreciate – my playoffs with the last week of the season was watching the Cubs. Just I wanted them to win their last game so they finished a game ahead of the Cardinals. That was actually my playoffs from the Cubs standpoint. But you mentioned that, you know, I appreciate your comment on what it would take for St. Louis. And you think Chicago is going to be better, and you love the manager in Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh's got some good pitching. But realistically, if you're going to talk about improving a team, the easiest way to do it is the NL Central, because you don't have to compete with the Phillies and the Mets and the Braves. You don't have to compete with the Dodgers, the Padres. So I think, truth be told, like you said, for the Cubs and the Cardinals and or the Reds, it's not going to take that much to compete to get to that division, because Milwaukee's, you know, the lesser of the three division teams, you know, leaders.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, it's a great observation, Joel. It really is. And the thing of it is, that's why I say the Cardinals, I use the term rebuild because I'm not afraid to use it. It's like the Cardinals are afraid to use it. And I don't know why. I mean, there's different kinds of rebuilds. I think the Cardinals are into like kind of a soft rebuild or a moderate rebuild. And to your point, sir, it'll take them like 2 years to kind of reset this thing. And I'm not even saying that 2 years will be awful. I mean, they might be pretty decent, pretty good in 2026. But I think 2025, for sure, this is a transition year. You're getting ready to hand it over to a new president of baseball operations. He's spending this entire year focusing entirely on resetting and rebuilding the Cardinals farm system, player development system, which has just fallen apart. And that's the biggest mistake Bill DeWitt has made, because that used to be his thing, player development. Minor leagues are really important. Branch Rickey started it all. You know, they have this sacred tradition almost. I don't know why Bill got away from that. So they're trying now to rebuild this great traditional Cardinal strength, which is the farm system. And I'm glad that Chaim Bloom's doing it, because he did a heck of a job with that, not only in Tampa Bay, but in Boston. When he took over in Boston, the Red Sox had the number 30. They were the dead worst, dead last farm system rating in the sport. And this year, you know, and it's only a little bit more than a year after he was fired, in August of this past season, they were number 3. So they went, and the reason they're number 3 of all the guys that he drafted, so they went from 30 to 3rd in basically two and a half years. So this is the guy to do that job. And I'm glad, in a way, I wanted to see him, like Bob Lutz did, take over in terms of like this year, run everything this year. But the more I think about it, and also knowing that Chaim Bloom specifically requested, this is a big job. I need to take care of the farm system first. That thing needs to be fixed. That needs all of my attention. And I think that's a smart way to look at it, you know, rather than have him trying to do everything all at once. I don't have a problem with the reason why they did what they did, because you know why? Because this is how Chaim Bloom wanted to do it. So I would defer to him, you know. But yeah, I just hope Mozeliak doesn't screw anything else up. That's all.
Before I let you go, Max, I'll get out of this interview. I promise. We're running against time. Quickly, Bernie, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Give me
sure.
One positive attribute of John Mozeliak, because you know him much better than I do. And my version of John Mozeliak is what I'm presented in interviews and media. And he just comes across as snarky and glib. He can't be that all the time. So give me something positive before you go.
Gosh, I'm trying. And listen, man, I like Mo personally. And Mo, his entire reign in office overall, it's going to go down as a really outstanding 16, 17 years as the general manager. But the thing that I appreciate about what he did the most was that he kept a good team going after losing La Russa, after losing Pujols to free agency, after Dave Duncan retired. He made some really good signings, some really good trades, and kept the Cardinals near the top for several years after that. And he also healed a terrible division in the front office after Jeff Luhnow came in, and him and Walt Jocketty got into a blood feud, and it just tore the organization apart. And John Mozeliak actually brought everybody together, and that was followed by, with Jeff Luhnow's work on the farm system and the draft, the Cardinals all of a sudden just went up a next level and had a great run for a long time. And a big part of that was because John Mozeliak brought that thing together. It was a terrible divided organization, but he just got Stalen, right. Stalen the job. You know, he's got Stalen the job, and it's, you know, he even knows it's time to go because he's the one that said he wanted to go after 2025. Thank you, Bob.
All right. I still don't like him, but good effort. I appreciate it, Bernie. Always a pleasure.
I wasn't going to change your mind. That's all right. I knew I was a losing proposition right there.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. Hey, thank you, and we'll get you on again.
Sure. Thank you.
Bernie Miklas joining us, talking about the Cardinals. Thanks for indulging me, everybody. I do appreciate it. We got a little Royals talk there as well. Tomorrow, Jeff will be back. We'll talk with Shelby Werman, head football coach at Cheney High School, as well as Joe Auer, the head basketball coach for boys at Heights. Want to get his thoughts on the recent increase in the number of games at the high school level from 24. I'll look it up. But they're going to play more games. So we'll have those folks on, and then we'll make our picks. Jason Duda won the picks last week. Maybe the first time ever he's done that.
Having listened to this show, I can tell you it probably is a first or second.
Yeah, he doesn't do well on picks, but he did well last week.
Is he still picking purposely against Jeff? There's a time Duda when he used to do that all the time.
Duda lets too many things get into his head. And, you know, there's not that much room in there anyway. So what goes in, something has to come out. And usually the trade-off's not that good for him. So we have Joel T. Lamerno. He's been good enough to co-host the show today. Wichita Thunder on home ice a week from Friday against Kansas City, the opener of the season. You mentioned you have a lot of home games early in the season. That's kind of a good thing, right? Does that build interest, build momentum?
You know, it's good if you're good. If you have a good start to the team and you win your home games early, I mean, from that standpoint, that's great. It could be great to build a momentum, sure. Personally, I'd like to, you know, spread things out. Last year was probably our best year from a ticket sales standpoint since, you know, the championship days. Because our schedule was so spread out, you know, it's six games here, six games that month, six. So, no, we've got to – you can't take a break. I've told my staff, and they're all listening right now. I know that. So they're tired of hearing me say if we – and in a different way, if we drop the ball in November, it's going to be a tough season. We've got to crush November attendance and ticket sales, you know, so lots of games early. But, you know, this is one of those years where you've got NCAA and –
have the NCAA tournament coming to
and the figure skating championships as well. So there's some big events the second half of the season, which, you know, push us to early in the season. But lots of good weekend dates and lots of good promotions. So yeah, but again, from a player standpoint, if you got a good squad, you come out of the gates hot and you win those, you know, you win those games, you know, you can take advantage early.
And you feel like you're in a pretty good place, marketing, promotion wise. You're ready to roll.
We've got a lot of stuff out there. My staff's been telling me they've been hearing the spots. We've got some good TV coverage from Cake, which is our exclusive TV partner. You know, our ads are out there. It'll really kick more in gear towards the end of this week, early next week. But yeah, sales are great. Our corporate sponsorships have been great. Our season ticket numbers are at their highest ever. So, you know, the support's been great, but, you know, I want to reward the fans.
And where's your office now?
Just down the street here at the Supercar Guys building.
Okay.
The former Italian Garden.
I know where that is.
Our owner, Brandon, you know, owns that building, and he completely renovated it for the Thunder a couple years ago. It's amazingly nice. Conference rooms, little bays that you can have private meetings in, tons of storage, and... you know, I'm a West Sider, so I like the location, too.
Sure.
I'm not going to lie.
Well, I appreciate you coming in today. Jeff would not be doing well.
I was going to ask you, your prediction, what's Jeff's demeanor going to be tomorrow? What's your prediction?
It won't be great, you know, because unless the Guardians figure out a way to get some runs. Mm. But right now, in a bullpen game for Detroit, the Tigers lead it 2-0, even though they've been out hit by Cleveland 5-3. Cleveland's got to figure out a way to score, and that's been their bugaboo for quite some time now.
You can say that about a few teams too.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things. Detroit doesn't score a lot either, but you knew this would be who had the best pitching. Both teams are very similar. They like to use their bullpens, and right now the Tigers getting to the late innings where it becomes even harder. Jeff's probably not in a great place at this moment.
It's 2-0, not 4-0. There's your benefit.
2-0.
That's your benefit right now.
It's doable. Yeah. Except when you can't score, 2-0 might feel like 4-0.
True. But yesterday when we were listening, I was listening in the car on the way home from work, and when that 2-0 Mets lead went to 4-0, that's when I thought,
oh, that killed
that,
you.
That, I thought that was it. Yeah.
That killed you.
Yep.
We've got a bunch of games tonight. All four series are in play.
Are you the guy that stays up all night?
I used to be, but I can't anymore.
So you did not see the end of the game last night?
I did not see the end of the game.
It was only about 10:30.
I recorded it and watched it this morning.
All right.
So that's I can make it till about 10. But I'm telling you, my friend, when you got a kitchen remodel and you're working and you're almost 70, the hours creep up on you.
What happened to Misty?
She went upstairs.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Pleasure. Joel anytime, Lamarna, anytime.
Our co-host today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks to Max back in the studio. Have a good evening.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know. I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.